Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy, and today we're talking about that gritty, messy season, spring breakup. And I've got two great guests in the studio today to take your questions about how's your house going to get through this and what's the water table going to do to your backyard. Please welcome Jim Ward. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Kath.
Thanks for coming. And Dan Young.
Hello.
Dan is from TerraSat Inc., which is a hydrology firm, and Jim Ward is from Alaska Craftsman Home Program, which does a lot to help homeowners and contractors get through our Alaska winters. We really welcome your questions, because these are two experts you might want to pitch some questions to. You can call us at 550-8433 in Anchorage, and if you're outside of Anchorage, try 1-888-353-5752. And you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. This program is live now. We'll take your questions. And we repeat the show at 7 tonight, but no call in then. And we also have a wonderful website called alaskapublic.org, where we have the promo for today's show and a lot of the links that we're going to end up talking about today. So you can just remember alaskapublic.org, and you can find some of this good information. So welcome, Jim and Dan. Because this is kind of a gritty, dark season, I wanted to tell a couple of breakup jokes just to set the mood and invite our callers to call in some breakup jokes with their questions. So here we go. I found these on the internet, and they're websites that you know you're an Alaskan when. So here's a couple. You know you're an Alaskan when the term breakup has more to do with the weather than personal relationships. Sounds true, don't you think? You're an Alaskan if you've ever hit a pothole and it totaled your car. By the way, we're going to have a city maintenance guy calling in later, and he's going to talk about our potholes here in Anchorage. So stay tuned for that. If you've got pothole questions, we'll have a good expert for you on that. And finally, you know you're an Alaskan when you spend more on windshield cleaner than beer. Okay. So let's start off by talking about what kind of breakup we think we're going to have. Dan, you're a hydrologist. You've been paying attention to water tables. And what do you think is going to happen? Where are we in breakup?
Okay, we're just starting. And typically, we start in the end of February or middle of February. We have a long breakup. It breaks up for a while, melts, it freezes. Then we get some more snow, then we get more breakup. This year is different. We're coming, we're at the tail end of a La Nina, where we've had colder than usual temperatures for 2 years. And this year, it stayed frozen until a week ago. So what we're seeing now is a rapid melt. We're going to have a very short breakup, probably last for about a month instead of from February till May, where most of the snow should be gone in the first week of May or so. So mm-hmm. It's going to go pretty quickly.
We have a little bit of a benefit being on the coast, don't we, where it's a little cooler on the coast than it might be in, say, Fairbanks?
Yeah, the difference between us and Fairbanks is it would stay a lot colder in Fairbanks in the wintertime. And then this time of the year, after the solstice, it starts warming up in the daytime and getting even warmer in Fairbanks than it does here. So they're used to a rapid breakup.
But it's new for us.
It's unusual for us to have it this rapid.
And so the consequences of that, lay those out a little bit for us.
Oh, sure. In the interior, there. When you get rapid melts, you can get ice dams and the ice jams causing flooding. In Anchorage, we're fortunate our creeks are already open and flowing. Most of them flow all year. And so our melt water will continue to flow. It's unlikely we'll get flooding in our creeks.
That's good news.
Yeah, it is good
there
news.
There is good news here.
And yes, and the ground, because we had so much snow cover this year, the ground is mostly thawed underneath the snow, and so we're going to get a lot of infiltration. Some years we get a lot of runoff. This year we'll get more infiltration and less runoff, and that's good news also.
Infiltration meaning it just soaks into the ground.
It soaks into the ground.
And goes down to the water table or to aquifers?
It will go down to the water table, which is the uppermost aquifer. And typically May is the highest month of the year for May and October are the highest months for the aquifers. So right now the groundwater is probably rising, and people who are built in marginal situations where they have basement flooding. This is one of those years they're most likely to see that happen.
Yeah, yeah. Count on it.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, you help homeowners and contractors with this kind of stuff. Maybe we should talk a little bit about sump pumps since it looks like people are going to need them.
In class, we get asked quite a bit about sump pumps. And if you have a sump pump in a crawl space or a basement, this is the day we need to go down
there.
Don't
wait another day.
And make sure that pump is operational. They typically actuate in some way by water in a reservoir when it comes up. So let's make sure that pump's coming on so it can do the job it was intended to do, and that it's getting the water to the exterior of the building, and that water has an opportunity to get somewhere then away from that building.
You know, if you're going to check your sump pump, imagine you bought a house and had a sump pump and you really never had one before. Do you take the lid off? I mean, what do you do to check a sump pump?
Well, some have a lid, some don't. But if you go down where the pump is and do a little investigation, I would say it's pretty intuitive to figure out whether or not that pump is working as it's intended. So if there's a cover, take the cover off. Frankly, a lot of most don't have covers. And again, let's make sure the pump is working. And
is there
it can
a way to test
job.
The pump? I mean, if there's no water in your yet.
Yeah, there is a way to test the pump most times. There's some kind of a float that's actuated when that, a float switch that's actuated when that water level comes up.
Mm-hmm.
What I see in crawl spaces with water issues that are intended to be pumped out by a sump pump is for whatever reason that pump is simply not working. So it's our job as a homeowner to make sure that system is operational.
Mm-hmm. Do you, is there a size of sump pump people should look for, or any qualities you'd recommend in a sump pump?
No, these pumps, they're all,
kind of basic.
They kind of look the same size, and they all sort of work the same way. I think the trick here is that it's working.
Yeah.
And that it's pumping the water to the outside. Remember, we can't, the city doesn't own the water in the crawl space. That didn't come from the house. That came from outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that water is supposed to be, that water can't be pumped back into the city's sewer system.
Oh, so no putting the hose in the...
That's correct.
But I mean, what if you're in low-lying property, and where do you pump your water?
Well, that depends. If you have a lot where you can pump the water from inside the house to outside, and then gravity feed it away from the house and off the lot and not onto the neighbor's lot. Sometimes, if there's no opportunity to do that, the provisions are made for an on-site pit of some type that the water can run into that.
Mm-hmm, with gravel and stuff like that.
So, and we have different names for these, but yes. So we got to get the water out of the crawl space, out of the basement, to the outside of the house. And then it has to be managed from there, and it has to go, again, where it was intended to go, away from the house, not onto the neighbor's lot, and into whatever drainage ditches you have in your subdivision.
It sort of has a whole new meaning to not in my backyard, right?
That's correct.
Not in your neighbor's backyard either.
Not in your neighbor's backyard.
Well, Dan, you had a good suggestion when we were talking before the show about what you do to avoid all that snow close to your foundation.
Sure. One of the things I like to do is keep the snow away from my house because when it melts, it could easily get into the through the foundation into the basement. So I use this snow blower. You could do it by hand, but go all the way around the house and cut a path about 6 feet away from the house, which is either snow-free or leave about 2 inches of snow on the ground.
Mm-hmm. So basically anticipate the problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if when the snow goes away and we still have water, it's muddy now and things like this, but not a bad idea to take some pictures outside your house so you can remember where low spots were, where water had pooled, where water had gathered, especially up against the house. So when it does dry out and we get out there, we can look at the pictures and get some of these spots filled and get this positive grade accomplished away from the house. And Mother Nature can do a lot of work for us to keep water away from your house.
So maybe you have a summer grading project, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, and if you're faced with that kind of situation, I mean, you just bring in fill and gravel? What do you do?
It depends. Now, we might be talking about just one little spot that maybe where a downspout comes down and we left a diverter off of that downspout. So there's maybe a low spot there. These spots, not necessarily a lack of gradage entirely around the house, but maybe one spot the size of the top of a 5-gallon bucket where water can run into.
Mm-hmm.
These are opportunities for water to gather against the house. And when that happens and it can run down the foundation wall, it can come in the house.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to invite callers not to miss this opportunity to ask their home questions or their water table questions. We've got Jim Ward from the Alaska Craftsman Home Program and Dan Young, a hydrologist with TerraSat.inc. Let's go back to you, Jim. We were talking earlier, Dan, about you hear this expression, Anchorage is built on a bog, so we're just going to be in the lowlands. Now, help me with that, because you can speak to sort of the before all the houses were here, and you know what kind of land do we have underneath Anchorage?
Sure, I can take you back 12,000 years in a time machine.
Okay,
it's a good thought actually. 12,000 years ago was the end of the last glaciation, and the ice was coming out of the Susitna River and the Matanuska Valley, Matanuska Glacier. And that extended to Elmendorf Air Force Base, to right about where the flight line is now.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the edge of the ice. But in front of that ice was runoff from the glacier, and it was flowing across the top of the ice. Eagle River was probably diverted over that ice into Ship Creek, formed a huge alluvial fan that went out to Point Woronzoff. And so there's anywhere from 12 to 20 feet of sand and gravel that's well-drained.
And that's good.
That's great.
You're loving
yeah.
that. Yeah.
And then other areas were from the previous glacier that ended maybe 70,000 years ago. All of Anchorage was under ice at one time. And those deposits are more gravelly, silty, sandy, so they hold water. And as the glaciers were receding, there were bogs that formed on top of those. So some of those bogs have been filled in and houses have been built on them. Some of them remain as wetlands and mm-hmm. are preserved.
So what parts of town are likely to have water issues then?
A lot of the hillside would have drainage issues.
I would think since they have elevation, they'd be lucky, but no.
No, there's a lot of springs on the hillside, and those sometimes come out in basements.
Ah.
And at the base of the hillside, like in the Muldoon area, out at Fort Rich, there's a lot of east of Muldoon, there's a lot of peat bogs in that area. There used to be peat bogs over in Dowling and Lake Otis area.
Mm-hmm.
So those are likely to still be wet. And then some areas around our creeks mm-hmm. have wetlands around our creeks, so in the floodplains.
How about South Anchorage?
In South Anchorage, South Anchorage is a little more interesting in that there was ice out to the west and the inlet was dammed, and so there was a lot of sand and gravel on the western part of South Anchorage, and as you go eastward, that became finer as the delta got into silts and clays. And then out of the Clatt area, there were a lot of bogs in the Clatt area.
Mm-hmm.
So those are likely to still have water this year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And do you think if people are going to have water this year, they already have water in their basement, or they're looking to have in the next month or so?
Probably they're going to start seeing it either now or a week from now or somewhere in the next 30 days. But as Jim said, I would start inspecting today.
Yeah, don't waste another minute.
It's time to start monitoring the basements that are likely to have problems.
I really like Jim's idea too about taking pictures of what you see this spring so you can do something about it.
Yeah.
And don't be blissfully ignorant about it next year.
Proactive.
Yeah.
Proactive.
Right. Jim, do people call you with crises on their hands now, like they're panicking because they've got an ice dam that's what kind of calls are you getting, or do you get people who've had a bad experience and then they want to prevent it?
We do get those calls. Two nights ago, we did an ice dam class, and by the way, I'll take this opportunity to plug our classes Monday through Thursday night. for all Alaskans, 7 to 9, especially people in the rebate program. If you're not aware of the rebate program, you could go to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's website. It's alive and well, and it's available to all Alaskans to do improvements and possibly get rebates. So we do a homeowner education 4 nights a week at our classroom in Anchorage, and you can go to our website, Alaska Craftsman Home Program.
And we do have that website on alaskapublic.org also, so yeah.
So one of the classes is ice dams. In the ice dam class, we talk about that ice you see on top of the roof, at the edges, the icicles, and so on. But also, we talk about in the ice dam class everything that's going on inside that roof assembly that you never see. That's just as bad or worse. So this time of year, we do get calls about the ice dams on top of the roof, on the edges, that are backing water up and maybe getting some leaking into the house along the exterior walls, and how to get a trough through these ice dams. So we can put hot water up there, melt a trough through, and some chemicals that are safe, not too harsh, not too hard as salt chemicals, but the mid-range chemicals, the ice melt type chemicals that we could put in a tube, in a sock, in a piece of pantyhose, and make a log out of it and lay it across that.
Would it be pointing down?
Pointing down.
So it makes a trench for the...
And over 2 or 3 days, it'll melt a little trough through that ice dam, and that water can escape. Hmm. I think this time of year, the bigger concern, as Dan was saying, is going to be from water in the ground and water on the ground getting next to these buildings or coming up into these buildings from underneath. Don't overlook the fact that if water has an opportunity to get up against that house on the surface and just lay there, it will run down the foundation wall and get into that building, whether that's a basement or a crawl space. So we have to keep water away from the house, and that's the simple things of management of surface water. Gutters, if you have gutters, make sure that the diverter's on that downspout so that when water comes down that downspout, it can get away from the house that 2 or 3 or 4 feet. It's critical.
Mm-hmm.
Those diverters get in the way of the lawnmower. People take them off and leave them off.
Uh-huh.
That's a lot of water that can just lay right there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Could you tell us a little bit about hot roofs and cold roofs? Because I know that we're past, the damage has been done already, but if people had a bad experience and they want to correct, help them understand how roofs work.
Well, in the ice dam class, we also talk about how roofs work. In Anchorage, most of our residential buildings have what's called a cold roof. It's a ventilated roof. So there's some space in the attic above the insulation where air can move so that eventually the heat and moisture that escapes from the house below and gets through the insulation and up into attic assemblies can then get out of that assembly with the aid of ventilation in the roof. So a cold roof is a ventilated roof. There's air moving above the insulation. A hot roof is a roof that is not ventilated. The entire assembly is filled with something, insulation, roof sheeting on top, sheetrock on the bottom, and there is no opportunity for ventilation in these hot roofs.
So you would know you have a cold roof if you've got vents on the side.
On the side and something on the top also.
Uh-huh.
Maybe gable end vents, maybe ridge vents, and something down low at the soffits. A hot roof, you would not see any provisions made for ventilation high or low.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just because you have a sloped roof or a pitched roof of some kind, maybe vaulted ceilings inside the house with no attic, there may be an attic up there. It may just be only about an inch and a half high. It may still be and probably is a ventilated roof with just a little airspace above the insulation. But again, we would see evidence on the exterior of that building high for ventilation and something low.
Yeah.
But hot roofs, again, there are things that can be done to deal with a hot roof. There's hope. There are... There are things
despair.
We can do so that doesn't happen next winter. I would recommend you look at our schedule, look at our classes, like the ice dam class when we talk about cold roofs and hot roofs and how next winter you don't have to have these issues.
Right. Are there architectural things that didn't happen with the housing stock in Anchorage? Are there smarter houses going up? Is there any difference in the kind of construction that we're seeing, Jim?
Really? No, there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
A house that was built last week is new. It looks new. But a lot of our best practices, a lot of things we do when it comes to building science, really haven't changed a lot in the last 30 years. We're doing it the same way we did. We just have to make sure we do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
An older house or a house that was built last week might have the same issues. Maybe there was ventilation provided for, but maybe it got affected in some way. Maybe
wet.
The insulation blew over the top of ventilation low. Maybe the insulation got wet. On and on and on. So, again, what we do today, for the most part, from a building science aspect, hasn't changed a lot.
Well, you know, you're very good about telling us to go down and check the sump pump, but should we be going up into our attics? Is that an annual event we should try to see what if the insulation got wet, if it blew over the ventilation spots? I mean, is that a kind of annual thing, or do you wait till you have a big ice dam?
Well, I recommend in the ice dam class that people do go in their attics. We don't go in our attics and we don't go in our crawl spaces, but it's a good thing to look in an attic, for example, that's intended to be a cold roof, a ventilated roof system. And we have those some ventilation low and some ventilation high that we've saw from outside. We could go up in the attic when it's light outside and dark in the attic, and we need to see daylight low, and we need to see some daylight high where that ventilation is supposed to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
Because things do happen. Wind blows insulation around, and it covers some of this stuff up that's not supposed to be covered.
Yeah, yeah. Is there ever a time you have to replace your insulation? Like, can it get old?
Well, insulation, most times when people add insulation to an attic, it's because they never had enough in the first place. Codes do change. That's one thing that's changed. Insulation codes, more insulation is now required in attics than was 10 years ago, a little bit more. In the rebate program, people, that's one thing most do is they add insulation in the attic.
And you can just put it right on top of the old stuff?
Right on top of the old stuff. Many different ways we can do that. And in our insulation class, which is on the schedule, we talk about that.
Uh-huh. But you do have to have some space between the insulation and the top of the roof so you can get air movement?
You absolutely have to have a space and to provide for that ventilation above the insulation. And sometimes it edges. The insulation baffles maybe fell down. Or maybe the insulation blew around and got over the top of them and plugged them.
Uh-huh.
And again, if you were to look in an attic, after you'd looked outside and you saw that down low there was some kind of ventilation that was supposed to be happening, but you go up in the attic and when it's light outside and you look down there and you don't see daylight coming through, we know that probably the insulation is blown around and covered it up.
Mm-hmm.
And once we lose the ventilation in an attic, there's the opportunity for the temperatures to rise in the attic and melt snow and build these ice dams and icicles.
How about if you're looking at your ceiling and you see a spreading spot on your ceiling? What does that tell you?
That tells you that you have excessive air leakage from the house up into the attic. And when that air gets up into the attic, it's most of the year colder up there than it is in the house, so we're going to lower the temperature of that air that leaked up there, and we're going to raise the relative humidity and probably hit the dew point, get condensation on surfaces, and in the winter when it's cold, that'll freeze, and then when it warms up, it'll melt and drip back onto the insulation and eventually back into the house.
Ouch. Ouch.
So that's why we do a two-hour air tightness class.
Uh-huh.
To deal with some of these issues of not keeping what's in the house, and unfortunately, a lot of it's getting up into the attic. And we lower temperature, we raise relative humidity drastically, mm-hmm. and we get condensation.
If you've just joined us, I want you to know the voices you're listening to are Jim Ward, who's an expert on ice dams and sump pumps and how to get your house through winter without letting all the heat out through the ceiling. And Dan Young is a hydrologist with TerraSat Inc., and both of them can answer questions about what to do with your house, what to do about water in your backyard. I wanted to go back to you, Dan, and just ask you, do you get horror stories? I mean, do you come upon situations that need to be resolved, maybe with grading or something like that? That do people come to you with disasters?
All the time. And actually, I get mostly potential disasters. So I work with a lot of land developers and builders, and I help them get their permits and do their drainage plans so they can get permitted with the municipality to build. And then we manage their stormwater for them. Not everybody wants to use modern practices. A lot of people just ignore some of the stormwater issues, and that creates challenges for their properties. They get stormwater runoff that pollutes our creeks, pollutes our storm drains. So I work on a lot of sites like that to bring them into compliance.
Some regulations here at play, right?
Well, there's some very serious federal and state regulations in place that are enforced by both the state and the municipality.
So are you talking commercial development then? Would these be housing projects or
housing,
store projects?
Sure, they're both. They're commercial as well as residential development, developing an entire subdivision or attracting a subdivision. The stormwater has to be managed. The earth gets disturbed.
When they're building.
They're building, then that's a necessity to disturb the earth to put a foundation in. The idea is to minimize the disturbance, and then in the wintertime that ground will freeze and it will be bare. In the springtime, if it's frozen, the snow melt will go across that surface, thaw the upper part, and cause erosion, and that will move into our creeks and damage our fish. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I see these. That's part of my job all the time, seeing this kind of.
Yeah. How about you, Jim? What kind of nightmares have come across your desk?
Well, as Dan said, as a builder, developer, I can tell you we've made great progress in the last 10 to 15 years in that in the past, let's say someone was going to develop a subdivision, was there a master plan for where all that water would go? You'd think there would have been, but there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to look at this. We have to not only know what's going to happen on each individual lot, but where's the water on that lot going, and then where's it collected, and where's it going after it's collected?
Mm-hmm.
Right down to and including the elevation of the house on each lot. In the not-too-distant future, a builder could go in. We could go in. I'm a builder. We could kind of position a house anywhere, any elevation we wanted to. We could, if a lot was in a hole that was lower than the lot on each side, we could put the house down in that hole and vice versa. Now, we have to look closer at entire subdivisions and where is the water going to go, and have a plan for that water movement before we start, mm-hmm. and not try to deal with it later when it's really too late.
Mm-hmm. So there was an evolution in our building.
There was a tremendous evolution, and there was a major, major need for that evolution.
Well, we're going to take a little break, but you've been listening to Jim Ward of the Alaska Craftsman Home Program and Dan Young, a hydrologist with TerraSat Inc., and we'll be back. We hope to hear from you on some of your questions, and this is Kathleen McCoy. You're listening to Hometown Alaska.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage. Thank you.
crawl spaces get wet.
You're back listening to Hometown Alaska, and we are talking breakup and water problems, wet basements, ice dams, roofs that leak, and you didn't know there was a leak there. So one thing, one of my colleagues was mentioning to me that they saw manhole covers with bubbles coming out of them, and I'm assuming this must be stormwater runoff or, you know, meltwater runoff. Dan, you said that you worry a lot about that. You work a lot on that. What do you think we're going to see in the next, as we see breakup progress?
Sure, that's possible. If the storm drains, if the melts too fast and the storm drains start
flooding. Do they freeze?
Well, actually, the outlets could freeze, and so those are almost the hot air, cold air situation, mm-hmm. the same thing that Jim was talking about. So if some of the outlets are partially frozen or were partially frozen, you could back up, and mm-hmm. The water could back up and rise. If we melt too fast, then it's bigger than the storm drains could handle. They would fill up. Mostly, I think you're going to see on the hillside, you'll see culverts that might have frozen up that haven't been thawed yet, mm-hmm. that will plug the flow and cause backups.
Well, I want to come back to that, but we asked the city if the pothole guru could give us a call, because potholes are one of the things people in Anchorage get to experience. And Alan Jakowski. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how you doing?
He joined us from the city today to take the calls on potholes. And basically, Alan, I just kind of wanted to ask you, how's it going? We've been talking about the breakup. We've had a lot of snow. Have you crews been out there already? What are you seeing on our streets?
Well, we see just what everybody else sees. We see the potholes develop this time of year, usually through April and into early May when the thaw is going on. But our crews are out there filling potholes as we see them and as people call them in. And, you know, the thing is, the big issue is we can't be everywhere at one time. So if people could assist us by calling in, that greatly helps us. We put them on a list, and, you know, barring any major issues, they're filled within 24 hours, and we just keep doing that through this process.
Now, on our website, we put the pothole call-in number, which goes to the city and has a recording that tells you what information to leave. And there's also a form people can fill out on the city's website to tell you where there's flooding or tell you where there's potholes. Does that work pretty well for you guys? Do you get a lot of feedback?
We do. A lot of people, of course, have moved to, you know, online type stuff. So it's at muni.org. If you go to the street maintenance page, it's called an online feedback form, and you can report anything from potholes to obstructions, anything that is a concern, and we deal with it.
Now, why don't you just tell us real quickly why we have such big potholes in Anchorage?
You know, it's not unusual. If you go to the Northeast, you see the same issues. I was raised in the Northeast, but you see the same issues. It's just based on the ground gets saturated, and especially here in Anchorage, because if you go down a little ways, usually the ground is froze. So there's nowhere for the water to go. It stays in the upper tier of the base of the roads. And then as the melt happens, if there's any little cracks in a road, the water penetrates, and then as cars go across, it's called a pumping action. And what that does is over time it pumps the material out from under through the crack, and then it creates a void, and then the asphalt breaks off, and it's just a continuous process until you get it repaired. And that's what the crews do. They go out and clean up the holes and put a hot mix asphalt back in and compact it so that it it's back to a good usable street.
Do you guys work 24/7 on this? I mean, do you have kind of a crisis mentality about it when it gets really bad?
Yeah, actually, our crews go to a 24/7 operation. Basically, a lot of people don't realize that from mid-October till the end of May, till we're done with our sweeping operation, which started today.
Oh, yeah, I wanted you to tell people about the sweeping, because I'm ready for them to sweep my neighborhood.
absolutely. We started our major function today. We did do a little sweeping last week in the downtown business district at night, which is normal. We hit that first because it thaws first, and based on the way the snow is removed, but now we'll start hitting the arterials and collector streets. And we are also, if you see a truck out spraying material down, it's a dust palliative that we put down to keep the dust down. It's part of our PM10 program that we do to help air quality.
Do you spray before you sweep, or is that just till you can sweep?
It's till we can sweep. It's just to hold the dust down. So, you know, as traffic moves, as it dries out, as it does this time of year, you don't get a lot of rain, it seems like. It just helps hold the dust down until we can get it picked up.
And I saw also on the Muni site that there's a page where you can see where the snow crews are, you know, in the heart of winter, you can see that. And it actually has how much money we've spent on removing snow. Do they do the same thing for how much we've spent repairing potholes?
No, because it's really not that large of a cost. We run it, you know, it just depends on how the breakup works. If we get a lot of rain, it'll get a little worse. But normally, it's about a six-week period that it, and it varies from year to year depending on the runoff. But this year, it's actually been a very favorable breakup for us because it's freezing at night, so we're not getting the huge you know, rivers running down the shoulders of the road, which makes things worse. It just removes more material and creates more potholes. So
right.
I would say we're pretty beneficial. It's a pretty average year, actually a little better than normal because we haven't had any rain.
And
I
it seems to me the idea is that when it freezes at night, it stops the melting, so the ground has some time to absorb it. Is that, am I hearing you right?
Well, it's not only the ground, it gives the drains a chance to catch up, and it also gives the creeks in town, which are the, you know, which takes everything eventually to the ocean, it gives them a chance to catch up to where we have minimized potential for flooding, which is, you know, it's really a big deal for us versus a real warm period and then some rain. It just creates a lot more problems.
Right. And does the use of studs make our potholes worse or not?
Yeah, that's up for debate. You know, I personally, it has a minimal impact from what we see, but I think it does have some impact on the overall, you know, the deterioration of road over time. But
but a regular tire can cause damage too, huh?
Yeah, all different loads and types of things create damage. So it's hard to say. The verdict's still out on some of that.
Yeah. You know, as I drive around Anchorage, there's some streets, and you guys might know of some also, that always seem to have a big flood at a certain time. I'm thinking about Northern Lights just before you hit the Seward Highway there. You know, I saw crews out working there. It looked like they were cleaning a drain or working on a drain. But it's like every year. And I guess those are situations where the drains just can't handle the flow for a while.
Yeah, sometimes it's both. I mean, we have the same issue. That would have been one of the DOT roads, which is also a complication in town. There are a lot of mixed grid network of DOT roads versus municipality roads. But it's very common for drains to plug as snow gets packed into the curb faces and stuff, that we go out and take a boiler and thaw them in the spring. We started doing that, six, 7 weeks ago. As the snow started slowing down, we get out there, we cruise and start getting them open because it's inevitable that the thaw is going to come, and that's what prevents the flooding, is getting those drains opened up as early as possible.
Right. One last question, Alan, and really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. We talked here about how homeowners really aren't supposed to drain their property out onto city streets. Do you see much of that, and do you ticket people for that?
Yeah, usually it's not so much an issue of draining. It's usually pushing snow in the right-of-way, and the right-of-way department handles that on a case-by-case basis. If, you know, they see a conflict or a potential abuse of the system, then they contact the homeowners. So, but we see very little of people pumping water into the right-of-way. That's pretty minimal.
It's mostly maybe they shovel their driveway into the street,
yeah,
something like that.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, and then it just creates more, it's just more snow to that ends up in the right-of-way, which, of course, adds to more melt in the spring. So we try to keep a handle on that.
Yeah. So your commitment is you try to get those potholes filled in 24 hours, did you say that?
Yes, that's, and if they're... If there's something that really is a safety issue, we address them just as soon as possible. You know, especially in the collector streets, the arterials, roads that get a lot of high traffic, we always try to get those as soon as possible. But we almost religiously get to all of them within 24 hours. It's just something that's our goal. The only times we usually don't is if there's a mechanical breakdown of some of our equipment.
And we did on our website, alaskapublic.org, post a PDF that shows which streets are DOT streets and which streets are muni streets, because you're right, you probably get calls from people who are talking about streets that the state is actually responsible for. But I noticed on your pothole call-in, if people call in with the wrong street, in other words, it's a street you don't maintain, you'll forward that information on to DOT for them?
Absolutely. We do that with everything any time during the year. If somebody puts a call in and it's not ours, we either send it over to DOT. If it's a traffic issue, we send it to the traffic department. We've been doing business that way for years.
Yeah. Well, Alan, anything you want to leave us with before you get back to doing what you do?
If people have issues, please give us a call. It's of great help to us because we can't be on every, especially the residential streets. If you see something that's an issue, please call it in, and we'll get to it. And, of course, the pothole hotline is 343-6363, and that goes directly to a line. It gets checked quite often and gets added to the list. Anything on that call gets to the list, same as the feedback forms, and then the crews deal with it on the next shift.
All right, Alan, thanks so much for taking time to call in. I really appreciate it, and you folks know now who to call when they see a big pothole. Thank you.
You bet. Take care.
Bye-bye. So Dan and Jim, we have a caller, and I'd like to take them. Want to get these questions on the air. Eric, hi. Oh, we lost Eric. Okay, well, perhaps he'll call back. So anyway, where were we? We were talking a little bit about storm issues. And Jim, you said you had some things that you wanted to make sure we touched on. So what are some of your classes? I think I was asking you what nightmares have you been presented with from homeowners, or you also deal with contractors who are taking classes so they are aware of the issues that they need to deal with.
Yes, we do. We give classes for homeowners. We give classes for builders, people who want to become builders. One thing I'd like to mention on crawl spaces, and that is another danger with the water in crawl spaces is the water in the crawl space that's in vapor state. Humidity in crawl spaces. This is the time of year, and most of us in Anchorage, our house is built on a crawl space that has these vents, these operable, openable vents that are intended to be opened in the summer and closed in the winter. We got to get these vents open now. There's much more opportunity for high humidity in crawl spaces in the summer than there is in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to make sure we get these crawl space vents opened so that we can get the humidity out of the crawl space. If you go to our website, we do offer a 4-hour crawl space class for homeowners that want to really deal with their crawl space if they have any humidity issues. But let's get those vents open.
Now, I want to tell folks who they're hearing. That's Jim Ward from the Alaska Craftsman Home Program, and they deal with teaching people about the right way to manage their homes in winter, including homeowners and including contractors. And also we have Dan Young, who deals with all kinds of water issues. He's a hydrologist, knows Anchorage water levels very well, also can speak to statewide issues. And we'd like to invite folks, we have a little bit more time. If you've got questions, give us a call at 550-843 or 1-888-353-5752. Or if you're shy, we can take an email from you at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So anyway, Jim, I was thinking about, I had somebody redo a basement bathroom, and he said, oh my God, you got to pull out your shower surround because that was probably what was leaking. But those downstairs spaces can really be traps for kind of unhealthy moisture.
They can be, but they don't have to be. There's some simple physics involved but if it isn't managed and we don't manage relative humidity in our homes and in the crawl space, in the attic, and in the house, we need to keep that humidity something between maybe 35% to 45% relative humidity.
Mm-hmm.
Anything more than that, and that air has too much moisture in it.
Right.
And then we have issues with mold and mildew.
Right. Well, should you wait till you smell it, or should you put what can you put down there so you can keep measuring your, is there some little gadget you can buy at a hardware store?
Well, we could now buy simple measuring devices, these digital hygrometers that work on a 9-volt battery that'll typically tell us in a readable digital number what the relative humidity is and usually what the temperature is.
Sounds like a really good idea. We've got a caller, by the way. I want to make sure we get Rick on. Hi, Rick.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for calling in. You've got a question about drainage?
Yeah, thanks for being here and giving us all this good info. Yeah, you know, with this record snowfall, da-da-da-da, and all this snow on the ground, it's kind of after the fact for as far as the melt and drainage, and I'm just wondering about around the sides of houses with snow already around the ground and on the ground, if we have to be concerned, if we, you know, need to be out maybe digging a trench around the skirt of the house, or if we just have to keep our fingers crossed that most of the fluid washes away and not too.
Okay, this is Dan. I'll answer you, Rick. Thanks for asking, Dan. The question. The practice that I have for my house is every year I shovel the snow away from the house, or I use a snow thrower. And so usually in late February or mid-February, I'll get out and I'll move all but 1 or 2 inches of snow off the ground for about a 6-foot path around the house. That way, when we start getting melt, there's a very small amount that will go into the ground around the foundation. The big concern is especially if you've shoveled your roof and that snow is sitting next to your foundation, or even if you haven't shoveled your roof, the snow melting off your roof plus the snow in your yard will go down along the foundation wall and seep into your foundation.
Yeah, so that's a lot of snow to move, Dan. Are you available? I mean, 6 feet wide berth width, and yeah, I particularly have a roof that's not flat, but flat enough that I was concerned and had a bunch removed. And, I mean, my snow was piled up so high, it was as high as the roof. You know, it was a huge amount. And I don't know how to even begin to try and do a 6-foot swath.
What would you do if that was your house, Dan?
Yeah.
Well, I have a large snow thrower, but so it wouldn't be a challenge for me. But there are plenty of people who do snow removal maintenance that you could hire. You'd have a huge choice of people to.
You just
to
look in the phone book under snow removal,
yeah.
Or
yeah.
Really, it's that simple. Okay.
Yeah. So I guess I'll have to put in my lottery tickets so I can
afford that.
More work. Hey, yeah. Thanks very much for your guys' time. I'll keep listening.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for calling, Rick. So let's see. I always want to get our callers on as soon as we can. But you and I were in the middle of. I wanted to ask you about. Okay, you said humidity can gather in your crawl space or basement areas. Where are those vents? Are they easy to see if I go down there?
Those vents, you will be able to see from outside. These are usually there's at least a couple on each side of the house, and they have usually a piece of wire sticking out, and you take this wire and you push it in, and that opens the vent.
Pretty easy.
Pretty easy, but they do need to be opened in the summer and closed in the winter.
Okay.
That's the only ventilation, that's a more really a passive ventilation where we have some vents on each side and the air can sort of move through the crawl space.
Mm-hmm.
Critical that those be open.
And I guess if you have a basement with windows, definitely get them open some of the time, huh?
So with a basement, that's different, but a basement would be like the house above. We have to provide for ventilation, for air movement,
mm-hmm.
and definitely don't want to leave areas closed up mm-hmm. and not ventilated.
Do you, you know, just this fellow Rick who called, who's like, well, how am I going to move this snow? If people have questions or they want some on-site advice, does the Alaska Craftsman Home Program ever do anything like that, Jim?
We do, or we have the ability to help people make good choices on maybe who they should talk to or resources available to all of us as homeowners on how to deal with some of these real-world issues we have.
Mm-hmm.
So Alaska Craftsman Home Program is a resource that people can turn to for information.
Yeah. Now, homeowners can take classes for free. I think it might be paid for by the Alaska Housing Finance. Yeah,
that's correct. These homeowner classes are available,
uh-huh.
are in conjunction with the Alaska State Rebate Program.
Okay.
This is a program that's available to all Alaska homeowners who live in their home, and education's a part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
So they could contact Alaska Craftsman Home Program or Alaska Housing Finance Corporation if they want more information on these programs. It's funded with, in large part, every year by state money, our money, capital budget.
Money.
Mm-hmm. Money well spent.
Do you find that homeowners in Anchorage, particularly you deal with Anchorage probably, are a little naive about how much they should know about all this?
Well, and we do. We actually do these classes all over the state, from mm-hmm. Southeast to Nome.
Oh, okay.
And the people we get in the classes, we find they're not naive. That's for sure. A lot of us about a lot of things may be ignorant of things, but it doesn't mean we can't know.
Right.
We're just not aware of a lot of building science, for example. And there's no reason we would have been until now, but now we have places to go to find
out. If you lived in California, it might be different when you moved to Alaska, right? Some of the issues.
Well, they have their own set of issues, and
true.
Most very similar to ours.
Yeah. Well, we've got another caller, and this looks like it's directed to you, Dan. Hi, Kevin.
Yeah. I have another question. I wanted a little follow-up on the previous comments about clearing snow, especially when you cleared the roof around your house. Is there a concern if, or could I be less concerned if I have, I live here in Spinard, there's really sandy soil. I'm right adjacent to an old creek bed. Everything has always drained well around here. I know the clay layer is about 7 feet deep. Is that likely to be sufficient to keep it from crawling into my foundation, or is that pressure going to push it in there?
Well, very good question, Kevin. Thank you. What you're looking at, if you have snow built up around your house, like you shoveled it off your roof and it's sitting next to your house, the water is likely to go down through the sandy soil right along your foundation wall. If there are any cracks in your foundation wall, the water will get into your foundation. It could get in underneath your foundation. And so I'm very familiar with those soils, the sandy soils over the silt or clay layer. And yes, with that much snow that we've had this year right next to your house, you have a good chance that you will get snow melt into your basement or crawl space.
So the porosity of the sand, even though it flows, is not necessarily an advantage because it's also going to still flow down there easily through the soil and through those cracks.
If the snow's moved about 6 feet away from the house, there won't be enough moisture next to your foundation to get in. But if
that shouldn't be a problem. It's only about 50 tons.
Is there any kind of trenching that you can do if you don't want to move all that snow? Is there some other way to kind of get the water go? No.
No, you could do it by hand with a scoop, kind of a shovel, and call it your gym workout.
Your gym workout
for the week, and just make it a week long project. As every day you go work out for an hour.
Yeah. So definitely, you think when snow has come off a roof, and can you still use a blower on it, or is that going to be too solidified?
It will refreeze. It will be much harder to move that way. So you take a larger blower.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But well, thank you.
Yeah. Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. So when you say a larger blower, what do you mean?
8 horsepower would be plenty.
Okay. All right.
not huge, just the kind that you use for your driveway, a typical driveway.
It has to be able to eat into that icy.
Yeah, with a two-stage sower would work fine.
Okay. So, Jim, what else? What else can we leave people with? It sounds like they're daunted by the snow dumps off their roofs quite a bit. People shoveled their roofs, and then now it's right next to their foundation.
Well, I would encourage people, do look up in your attic and make sure you look in your crawl space. In your basement, of course, you're down there. But let's look in those crawl spaces. Let's make sure the sump pumps are operational. And some common sense things we can do. And don't forget about high humidity in crawl spaces. Open the vents. And just take some care. It's mm-hmm. incumbent on us to, we're the caretakers around our homes. So
mm-hmm.
it's up to us.
It's just something we need to learn about and find a way to manage, right? We've got another caller. Hi, Mike. You've got a call about rain gutters.
Yes. I notice in my neighborhood people put rain gutters up in various manners so that sometimes the water runs into another person's yard up against their buildings. And I was wondering if there are enforcement codes in the municipality for the installation of rain gutters.
Hmm. Good question.
Well, there are safeguards in place at the municipal level that tell you as a homeowner No matter what you do on your lot, whether it's pumping water out of your crawl space or managing a water that is on your roofs with your gutters, that you can't put it on the lot next door. You have to manage it. But as far as gutters, no. There is no regulation in place that says what happens, you know, how you have to manage that water specifically when it comes out of that downspout. But there is regulation that says you can't put it on your neighbor's yard.
Okay, so if you have a hill, your neighbor is slightly higher and the water runs down into your yard and up against your building, because the rain gutters are installed basically backwards to divert the water onto their own property, who do I call?
This is Dan. Probably the first person to call is your neighbor and see if you can work it out amicably. If not, you can call the municipality's code enforcement and talk to them. And lastly, you could call an attorney, but I would try to work it out with your neighbor and have a good, friendly relationship first.
Mike is laughing. Does that answer your question, Mike?
Yeah, sort of. But, you know, these things are put in just helter-skelter, and some people have the rain gutters draining right up against the corner of their own building, and I just don't understand why anybody would install it, and especially a company that was actually contracted to do the installation. It just it's pretty silly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks a lot for your call, and I hope it resolves well for you. All right. Well, we just have a tiny bit of time left. Any last words from either one of you, just real quick?
Well, for those who are in the construction industry, right now is the time to really get out and manage the snow melt. It's hard to put silt fences in the ground or even install straw wattles, but you can put in gravel bags. You can put in compost socks. They don't have to be excavated in the ground. You can just lay compost socks right on site and use those for filters. And also watch your the catch basins. Keep those protected.
All right. And
come and see us at Alaska Craftsman Home Program. Okay. Take advantage of some of these free classes paid for with our money, all of our money, well spent.
Yeah. Learn how to take good care of your house so you don't have these issues, right? All right. Well, we've really had a great session. I hope people learned a lot. I'd like to thank Jim Ward, president of Alaska Craftsman Home Program, Dan Young, a local hydrologist with TerraSat Inc., and a special thanks to our call-in guest, the pothole guru, Alan Chakowski from the city of Anchorage. Next week on Hometown Alaska, I'll be back as your host with Port McKenzie director Mark Van Dongen, rescheduled for March 14th. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org. You can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Kathleen McCoy.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.